Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim, and I'm joined today by the very distinguished and honorable Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawkwaters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Charles?
Well, to me, it's a Saturday.
It is a Saturday.
And what else would I rather be than sitting in here in your office doing a podcast?
Yes, yes, I know. We have very little to do in our lives.
Actually, we're doing we're both working today to help with the summer youth program. So we are doing we're really doing the Lord's work.
We are doing. Our reward will be in heaven.
It will be in heaven, and we will. So we're here helping out these people.
Now, you notice the two people not here today.
I do. I'm looking across the table, and I do not see young Brittany, and I do not hear the brown-eyed devil's loud yapper over here, so.
Well, you know, young Brittany is probably, she's probably hungover from last night, of course.
Oh, the poor girl, probably. She's probably waking up right now wondering where the hell she at.
Yeah, she probably just, you know, she probably just got in a couple hours ago.
No, that's probably true, yeah.
And then, of course, young Brandy is on vacation. Brown-haired devil's on vacation. I imagine she's playing video games and smoking weed.
She does that a lot.
Yeah. But anyway, today we're going to talk about George Remus, who was known as the King of the Bootleggers during Prohibition. George Remus had a local connection. Colonel and I are podcasting from Cincinnati, Ohio, and George Remus had his operation here, so he's kind of a local...
he's a local legend.
Local legend, and but also he's pretty well known. He's... actually, considered to be the inspiration for Jay Gatsby of the F. Scott Fitzgerald's great book, The Great Gatsby. It was supposedly based on George Remus. George Remus' character also appears in the HBO series Boardwalk Empire, which is a cool show if you've ever seen that. So,
And there's also it's been said that. Michael Corleone in The Godfather, part of his demeanor and attitude, his opposition to, just wholesale violence and, you know, mm-hmm. those kind of things, and viewing this as a business was kind of modeled after the way Remus thought.
Yeah, George Remus was, he was an excellent businessman, and although he ran an illegal operation, he came into it from the business sector. So he was an attorney. He had run a small business, and so he wasn't your typical mobster in a sense. But he saw an opportunity, a need, and sought to fill it. George Remus was born on November 14th, 1874, in Germany, and his family migrated to the United States and lived in Chicago when Remus was 5 years old. At age 14, George supported the family by working at a pharmacy because his father was disabled and unable to work. By the age of 19, young George Remus had already bought the pharmacy. So Now, this was back in the days when you didn't have to have an advanced degree to be a pharmacist. So this is, you know, back in the turn of the century. Within 5 years of buying the drugstore, so around age 24, he bought another drugstore, another pharmacy. So he was doing pretty well for a young man of 24. But he kind of got bored with the pharmacy business and decided he wanted to become a lawyer. At that point, he attended the Illinois College of Law, and he was admitted to the Illinois Bar in 1904. He specialized in criminal defense, especially murder, and became pretty well known. Became a pretty well-established attorney in Chicago and pretty famous. And by 1920, he was earning $50,000 a year. So that was a bunch of money back in
a lot of money.
Money back in 1920, sure.
That's three times what the county paying us to be.
Almost.
In today's money.
In today's money. So Remus was divorced from his first wife after she had an affair with his legal secretary. I'm assuming it was a male secretary, but I don't know. We'll just assume that. Then he married young Augusta Imogene Brown. Imogene Brown Holmes. That was his second wife. And so they had making pretty good dough in Chicago, making $50,000 a year as a defense attorney. Life was good. But in January 17th, 1920, the 18th Amendment went into effect to ratify. It was ratified, and that, of course, outlawed alcohol. It was the era of prohibition. It started in January of 1920, and within a few months, Remus, as a defense attorney, was seeing his clients really becoming wealthy overnight. He was seeing his clients making money hand over fist. And, he was thinking, well, you know, if they're doing this, they're getting rich off this, maybe I need to get involved in this. So he became very familiar, as most of his clients were involved in bootlegging. He became very familiar with the Volstead Act.
The Volstead Act and the 18th Amendment are one and the same.
Correct.
The Volstead Act is what was written and turned out to be the 18th Amendment.
Yes. And there were some loopholes in the Volstead Act. There was prohibition against alcohol across the board, but there were some exceptions, right, Colonel? And
You could still use it for medicinal purposes.
You could. Pharmacies could be bonded to sell liquor for medicinal purposes. You know, sort of like today we talk about medicinal marijuana. Well, there was some medicinal uses for alcohol, and pharmacists could be bonded. Now, remember, Remus started his career as a young man running a pharmacy. So that's what he does. He opens up pharmacies again and starts selling liquor for medicinal purposes. And, of course, someone comes in with a bad cough, he was able to.
Well, much like Granny Clampett. If you remember Granny Clampett, Granny Clampett used to have to take a nip for medicinal purposes.
She did. And of course, that was a rouge, but he was able to sell alcohol legally and in certain quantities. But he was running into some problems in Chicago because, of course, Chicago was a hotbed for bootlegging, and you had the Capone gang and Frank Nitti. You had all the established gangsters up there running the town, and even Remus's own employees would hijack his liquor and sell it. So I mean, you can't trust anyone these days.
And here's kind of an interesting holdover from the Prohibition Act with the medicinal thing. Mm-hmm. When the Volstead Act went into effect, Walgreens had 20 retail stores in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1920. Mm-hmm. In 1930, they have 400 stores.
So
Wall Street, Walgreens was built on medicinal whiskey.
So Sam Walton was trying to fill that need as well, I guess.
No, Walgreens.
Oh, Walgreens. Walgreens. But then, aren't they
part of lunch counters and?
Oh, I thought they were part of the Walmart family, though.
You know, we're gonna have to look that up because I did not believe they were.
Maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. Maybe maybe I was wrong. So anyway, Remus. Anyway, he's getting ripped off by everyone. He's getting threatened by the Capone and all the mobsters in Chicago. Even his own employees are ripping him off. So he says, you know, okay, I'll let them have this market. So Remus decides to move to Cincinnati, and in this region, we're in Cincinnati, Colonel and I. In this region at the time is where 80% of America's bonded whiskey was located. So he moved here and bought up most of the whiskey manufacturers, and you know, he said, "Heck, I'm not just going to buy whiskey and have it hijacked. I'll just start making it myself." So he opens up the distillery, and in less than 3 years from when he moved to Cincinnati, he made $40 million, and that's $40 million in 1920. Money. So you can imagine how much that is today. But he owned one of the America's most famous distilleries called the Fleshman's Distillery, which he bought for $197,000, which was, you know, a lot of bucks back in the day. But that included 3,100 gallons of whiskey. So he opens up, he buys this distillery, and as I said, turns that $197,000 investment into $40 million in 3 years. So he was doing quite well.
To me, I don't want to interrupt you here, but mm-hmm. It made me curious what you said about the Walton, so I looked it up real quick. Mm-hmm. We got the World Wide Web here in the studio.
You got Mr. Google.
We got Mr. Google, and it was Charles Walgreen, mm-hmm. And he went from it ended up by the end of Prohibition, started with 20 stores. Mm-hmm. By the end of Prohibition, this man had put together 525 stores.
Wow.
He is also the man who introduced the milkshake.
Really?
Yeah, and his wow. And
thank now, him for that.
He was a druggist. He was a druggist, mm-hmm. just like Remus. And his father, Charles Walgreen, made a comment. He was worried about fires all the time.
Uh-huh.
And they would have small fires because there was brewing whiskey and they had sure. whiskey. And he said, you know, when we have fires here, I want the fire department to get in and out as fast as possible. Because any time they came in, we lost cases of liquor out the back.
So. That's hilarious. That's good. I didn't know.
We're talking about whiskey, but rum, gin, brandy, mm-hmm. they were all legal, you know, for different sure. ailments.
Yeah.
If you had one ailment, you could get you some vodka. If you had another one, you could get you some rum. If you could add another one. So, you know, it wasn't just whiskey.
And this was the days before you needed a prescription. So, I mean, you could just come in and say your bursitis is acting up.
Yeah.
Give me a bottle of rum. So, yeah,
and there's a quote in The Great Gatsby. Daisy Buchanan, for those who read it, said, they're talking about Gatsby, how he got his money. He said, mm-hmm. well, he owned some drug stores. A lot of drugstores.
So, you wonder if that's how it's going to, you know, how the, because I think it's a matter of when marijuana is finally legalized, at least here. I know it's legalized in 3 states now. If it'll roll out to pharmacies like that.
It probably will. What you're going to see is just like this. I think Ohio, they have maybe just a few people that can get licenses to grow it.
Yeah.
So you have, I believe we're going to see it legal here in Ohio when it gets on the ballot.
It's going to be on the ballot in 2015. There's 3 different measures. One is to have a limit. One is going to have a limited number of manufacturers or distributors. and that's on the ballot in 2015. There's two others initiatives that would open it up to other distributors, but they're holding off, I think, till 2016.
And here, what we're seeing locally is Ohio is not really the perfect region to grow marijuana. Now, Kentucky, Kentucky is marijuana is their number one cash crop.
Right.
Tobacco, you got marijuana, then tobacco. But what you're starting to see here in Ohio, there are a lot of small businesses popping up, the hydroponics businesses. And mm-hmm. right now what they're growing are spices, herbs, things like that that they can sell. These are legitimate places. And I'm not saying they have an eye toward the future, but the future is going to be in hydroponic marijuana.
Yeah.
Because eventually you're going to have damn near every state legalize it.
Right. And you're going to have to, because otherwise the states are not going to lose revenue to their neighbor. It was just like casinos. But right. The weird thing about Ohio is that they got on a ballot for legalization of personal use and also legalization for medical marijuana. And I was thinking, why would you need medical marijuana if you have personal use? But I'm guessing it's for insurance
coverage.
Yeah,
what's going to be sweeter, Timmy? What will be sweeter? And the Colonel, the Colonel will clean though.
Right.
I live clean.
You live a clean life.
I do not pollute the temple that the Lord has provided me.
Do not. I will vouch for that. You don't even drink.
Unlike Brittany and Brandy.
They've been known to tip the bottle.
Oh, poor Brittany. She came in here the other day, elbow all swollen up for tipping the bottle back so much.
Yeah, she's pickled sometimes.
Pickled is the right word, Timmy.
Okay, well.
But yeah, what is going to be sweeter than walking up to the Kroger mm-hmm. and saying, I need my 2 ounce bottle or my 1 ounce bottle or the Panama Red, and giving them your benefit card and swiping it through and paying it.
Yeah.
It ain't like the old days when you had to meet Spider behind the building.
Man, and, you think know. Conservatives are screaming about Obamacare now?
I mean, that's just going to be the most, because everybody going to be up in that.
How
much can I put into my medical savings account? Because I've been having these headaches and. And my poor kids, I know they got allergies, and all of a sudden allergies are going to get far worse.
Well, I mean, in the medical, doctors and medical community stand to make a fortune as well. Okay, so anyway, back to Remus. I'm sorry, we got sidetracked.
Yeah, we did get off on a little sidetrack.
But they interesting, and Ohio has three initiatives in 2015. Two of them have backed out and said they're going to wait until 2016 because they don't think the electorate for the midterm election is the right electorate for their calls. So we'll see how that goes. But I think eventually it's going to pass and we're going to see the prohibition against marijuana ended. But let's get back to George Remus and the money he's making hand over fist. As I said, he made $40 million in 3 years. He was a good businessman. He saw a need, and he's meeting a need. And he was able to do it pretty much legally, but he does run into some legal problems in just a bit. But he was very well liked in the Cincinnati community. He served since his businesses served, obviously, would be very well liked by most people. He served Cincinnati as well as Newport, Kentucky. Now, that is closer to my neck of the woods. Newport in that era, in the 1920s and 30s, was a wild little town. They had casinos and they had a lot of prostitution. So he served all the clubs in the Newport area. People think of Cincinnati as being a very conservative city, which it is, but we just go across the river to Sin.
And actually, that's what they called Newport. They called it Sin City.
Yeah, Sin City. It was a little Chicago. But it's directly, for those of you who are not from the area, it's directly across the Ohio River from Cincinnati. It's 5 minutes away.
Yeah, it's just across a bridge, and it's Yeah.
Yep. It had quite the reputation. And the funny thing about Newport, and just not to get too sidetracked, but Newport, it took years to clean up Newport and get organized crime out of Newport because they wanted to attract more family-oriented tourists and people to live there. And now they give tours. Now what they do is promote Newport's past and give tours to all the gangsters.
Yeah. And one of the most, and we got to get back to this, but it plays a big role in it because we had a Law and Order sheriff. He was in Untouchable, George Ratterman.
Yes, yes.
If you remember him, and they ended up drugging him, taking pictures of him with a woman, and then blackmailing him.
Yeah, we have to do a history
and
of Newport.
And he did not, he just said, screw you. Yeah. Show the pictures.
Yeah.
Because you drugged me and put me with that woman.
Yeah.
You showed the pictures. Everybody's going to believe me. And everybody believed him.
Yeah. And, he cleaned up Newport. Now, you say that's a good thing or a bad thing. I kind of think it would have been fun to have around. It seemed like it was a wild. It's still a little wild old town, but not nearly like it used to be. But also, Newport is a home of the fella who, Mr. Thompson, who invented the Thompson machine gun.
Yeah,
so it's a lot of history there. But anyway, back to George Remus. He served, as I said, all the drinking establishments in the Cincinnati community and nearby Newport. One of his distilleries, he had several distilleries just in Cincinnati. And it was kind of neat how they had it. It was a building. It was in a home. The distillery was in the alcohol was in the attic of this home on Queen City Avenue. For you, those of you familiar with Cincinnati, it's the west side of town near the Colonel's neck of the woods, his stomping ground. But the basement had a trap door, and they would use a dumbwaiter to lower the alcohol down, and it'll go down into a tunnel where there'd be a waiting car who would bootleggers would be down in the tunnel, and they would lower this down. It was 100 feet long, and it went 6 feet under the earth. This trap door or this dumbwaiter, and they would lower the alcohol down and the bootleggers would get it safely. And it was never busted. That location was never busted by the local authorities. So it was a pretty sweet setup. There was a shootout in 1920, a raid of hijackers led by some disgruntled employees by Remus attacked one of Remus's armed guards, John Geeman, and there was a lot of shots fired and there was people wounded in the attack. In addition, he became known, as I said, the King of Bootleggers. He was very well liked in the community. He would have these lavish parties in his home. He in 1923 he had a birthday party for his wife Imogen, and apparently she appeared in a very daring bathing suit at the time, they had dancers and they had a 15-piece orchestra. I mean, it was a big deal. He gave prizes away to people who attended his parties. He gave at this new once at a New Year's Eve party in 1922, he invited 100 couples, the most prestigious families in the Cincinnati area, and as parting gifts, he presented all the men with diamond watches and gave each of their wives a brand new car. So I mean, he was like burning money, and he was just wealthy beyond all reason.
One of the things I find interesting about Remus too is that if you look through old pictures of him,
mm-hmm.
depending on the picture, the man looks like, he could look like Al Capone.
Yeah.
Or he could look like a senator.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was an educated man,
mm-hmm.
But he looked like he could be a rough man if he needed to be.
Yeah, he does. You're right. He does have that whole gangster persona look to him.
But he was a big, bulky man.
I mean, he was.
He wasn't a fat man. He just looked like, he had a little bit of look like Al Capone. Just a solid, you know.
Yeah, he's
But then you see him with his top hat and his suit and everything else, and the man looks like he could be the ambassador to Switzerland.
Yeah, and you know, there's I'm sure there was some, you know, he had to use some muscle within that sort of business, but there's no real record of him. You know, you don't see things
He had a partner, Peter Schmidt, mm-hmm. Started out as a truck driver with him, and he now George Remus was fairly insulated from what we call a mafia organized crime. Hell, he was a one man organized crime unit himself.
Mm-hmm.
But now Peter Schmidt was not his partner, but he was a close associate.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Schmidt shot a policeman, did time in prison. So Peter Schmidt was a man who kind of oversaw security for George Remus, and it kept him insulated, and Remus didn't really have anything to, he never had to give thought to it because Peter Schmidt was the one who took care of this. And
you are talking Cincinnati, so I mean, it's not Chicago, it's not New York, where you got all these, a lot of rival gangs.
No, but you did have, at one point, the Cleveland Mafia started seeing how much money was being made here. And they started to kind of wanted, and they just didn't feel like, well, although they did business with his partner, but they did not really want to go all out, because Cincinnati is a very strange place, as you just said. You know, it's okay for one of our local people to be the biggest bootlegger in the world, mm-hmm. but you mafia guys come down from Cleveland and we're going to lock your ass up.
Right.
I mean, so that worked in his favor too. Yeah. Yeah, it was very cliquish and very enclosed. So
yeah, but eventually. The authorities, the Bureau of Investigation, does catch up with George Remus, and he's brought up on charges of violating the Volstead Act.
Well, and his, you know, Remus's problem, you know what his problem was, Timmy? He was too good a businessman.
Yeah,
he was too good a businessman. They did not get him like they did Al Capone. Now, one of the things that Remus made sure he did all the time.
Pay his taxes. He's a good man.
But one of the things, his downfall was his meticulous bookkeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wasn't meticulous about where his whiskey was going, because he knew not to be dumb enough to do that.
Right.
What he was meticulous about doing was, because he was paying his taxes,
mm-hmm.
when he would buy his ingredients and buy what he needed to make whiskey, he kept meticulous records of it. So now what they did he was in 1925, this guy's indicted for thousands, literally thousands of violations of the Volstead Act. And how he got caught with this was because he's showing supplies, mm-hmm. and he's buying enough supplies to say, and I'm throwing out a number, to make 100,000 gallons of whiskey.
Right. The exemptions for the pharmacists, they were limited. It was like you could sell so much, or you could be in possession of so much.
And that's why, you could be in possession of so much, you could sell so much. And he reported everything he sold and paid mm-hmm. taxes. Now, of course, he didn't report what he was doing on the bootlegging side.
Right.
And they could show that, hold on here, Mr. Remus. You're buying, you know, what you're doing is you're telling us you came over here to Costco and bought 38 pizza doughs.
Right.
And then at the end of the year, you're telling us you sold 3 pizzas.
Right.
So, and you're paying your taxes on those 3 pizzas.
Yeah, no problem there.
And that's how they caught him.
Mm-hmm.
It was his bookkeeping. So he, you know, hell, he goes to court, and we're talking about thousands of violations.
Yeah. Now remember, George Remus is an attorney himself.
Yeah. And so, he defended himself.
Yeah.
He defends himself, but they find him guilty in about 2 hours. I mean, it was a short case. And for these thousands of violations that he got convicted, I think he only got convicted of about 6 or 7, mm-hmm. I believe.
Maybe, probably because the jury just didn't want to sit there that long and vote on each one.
Right.
He got a 2-year federal sentence.
Yeah, which was pretty much, if you're making $40 million,
that's a pretty easy sentence back in those days.
Yeah. And it's federal prison, too, so it wasn't like he was, you know, going to the state penitentiary.
Well, although they sent him down to Atlanta.
Atlanta, right.
Which later became famous for Joe Valachi being in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And
that's where they tended to send the mafia organized crime guys, was the Atlanta penitentiary.
Yeah, and they also sent Eugene Debs there, who was, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but Eugene Debs was a socialist who ran for president, and was arrested for speaking out against the First World War, and he actually ran for the office of president while an inmate in Atlanta. And
who used to do that all the time? Lyndon LaRouche ran for president.
Yeah. And then of course the Supreme Court overruled the Alien Sedition Act that says that you know that's where the famous quote is it okay to yell fire
on proud of
So, but anyway, go ahead.
So he goes down. He gets sent down to Atlanta for bootlegging. Now he befriends this guy down in Atlanta, Franklin Dodge, and Dodge, what unknown to Remus, is an undercover prohibition agent.
Yeah, Dodge was from Michigan, and his dad was a state legislature, and Dodge worked for the Bureau of Investigations, which was the forerunner of the FBI. And he was working on this big case, another famous case called the Savannah Four, which also dealt with bootlegging. And it was during this investigation he went undercover and went into the penitentiary there in Atlanta. And one of the guys he befriended was...
Yeah, it was Remus, really was by accident. He wasn't after Remus.
Right.
He didn't really even care that much about Remus. What he did care about was when Remus told him about how much money he had. And it's peculiar to me because this Franklin Dodge, well, we'll find out about him. Mm-hmm. This Franklin Dodge is committed enough to go undercover and say, send me to prison.
Mm-hmm.
Put me in with the rapers, the man rapers, the father rapers, the mother stabbers, the whatever. Put me in there with them. I'll be all right.
Right.
But because we need to clean this place up.
Yeah. So you think he's a good law-abiding...
You think he's an upstanding guy.
Yeah.
So what he finds out is Remus has still got all his damn money.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife has it all.
Yeah. So Remus confides in him.
Yeah, and his wife being his wife must have been one of the most charming women in the world. She was an attractive woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys didn't marry ugly women for the most part.
Right.
But, so Dodge gets out of prison, starts investigating Remus, resigns from his job, and starts an affair with Imogene.
So he finds out, but Remus confides in Dodge that his money, his wife
Imogene's
has...
Imogene's got all the money.
She's got power of attorney.
She's got power of attorney.
He's hiding it
everything.
With her. He
right.
confines it with Mr. Dodge, and then Frank Dodge sees an opportunity for himself, goes to the Bureau of Investigation, says, okay, here's my letter of resignation.
Yeah.
I'm moving to Cincinnati, and I'm going to woo Imogene.
I'm going to woo
with Remus.
Well, I believe what he did first... what I believe happened, and this is not, I don't think anybody's really clear on this, because he did not resign until after he got to Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
So he's up in, and he could have come to Cincinnati on the guise of investigating Remus.
Mm-hmm.
My personal theory on this is he started investigating Remus and fell in love with Imogene.
Mm-hmm.
Imogene.
And the millions of dollars that she
and the millions of dollars, yeah. But you know, one woman will make a man do stupid things.
Yes.
And it could have just been the woman.
So it could have been he legitimately fell in love with her. But obviously, this he's got in. Also, he understands that she's got access to Remus's millions.
Exactly. So So he's feeling pretty bulletproof at this time, and she falls in love with him. So he resigns his job, and they're together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dodge liquidates all of his assets.
Yeah, he talks her into selling the distillery, liquidating everything.
But getting rid of everything. And then hiding the money. Just hide the money, we'll be fine.
But they were generous, and they did give Remus some of the money.
What did they give him, like $20,000?
No, $100.
$100? Is that what they
gave him? $100.
Okay. Well, that was kind of.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about probably at that time he still had about
$40 million.
$40 million.
Yeah, they gave him $100, his share. Which
is, Now, Remus, being a reasonable man, felt that this was not really fair. And
so you steal my wife.
You took my wife. You took my money.
You sold my business.
And I'll tell you, they don't mention it. They never mention it. But you know what I'm betting? What was probably the final straw of this is if Remus had a dog.
Because
you know what? You come into the Colonel house.
Yeah.
You take my wife. I'm going to be a little perturbed.
Renee's a lovely lady.
Yeah. But you know what? She comes with a whole set of problems. So I'm going to say, you know what? Okay. You did. Now you got the woman.
So you're saying that there's some addition by subtraction? Is that?
No, I'm saying she is a lovely woman, and the Colonel been lucky to have her.
She is a lovely woman.
But however. You want to take my wife, you got your hands full. That's like me having a prize winning rattlesnake and you stealing it from me.
Right.
It's like, good luck with that. You know,
I don't know about comparing lovely Renee to a rattlesnake, but.
Oh, she bites you quicker than a rattlesnake. She got a bad temper. She got a bad disposition.
I don't think you better let her listen.
So, anyway, you take my money.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's going to make me mad too, but hell, what the hell? I made money before, I'll make money again.
Right.
But you take my damn dog, the colonel going to hunt you down and put some bullets in your ass.
Yeah.
You know, and probably not bullets, because I probably garrot you, because that's what you deserve if you steal a man's dog, is a good garroting. But anyway.
So Remus gets out,
and he is madder than hell.
Yeah, because out of $40 million business, homes, everything, he has $100.
Oh, he's madder than a tie hooker that just got a bad check. I mean, that's how mad he is right now.
I don't think they write checks to tie hookers. But
Jerry Springer did.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's another
problem. And on top of this, it's like they walk up to him, say, we do all this, and then they kick him right square in the Remus sack by trying to get him deported. And even hiring a hitman to kill his ass.
Yeah, so they try to get him deported because, he was born in Germany. That doesn't work. You know, again, remember, Dodge's father is a state legislator, so he's got some political connections.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not in the federal level, but he's got some connections.
Some connections.
So they try to get Remus deported to get rid of the problem. That doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So then they try to have him killed. They offer someone $15,000. That falls through. That kind of becomes public. And the folks who are against prohibition, there's a big block of people just like now against, you know, that are pro legalization of marijuana. There was a big group who wanted to end prohibition, and one of them was Congressman LaGuardia from New York.
Well, LaGuardia took advantage. Yeah, and LaGuardia is odd because he was a law and order guy.
Right.
But what he felt, he made Franklin Dodge really the face of public corruption.
Right.
What he said is, this is what prohibition can do to public employees.
Yeah, because Dodge was a public employee.
There's too much damn money. There's too much money involved. Too much temptation. So just make it legal again. You know, the bootlegging profits, they were corrupt in law. Everybody knew that law enforcement, you know, in Chicago.
Right.
Hell, every place in the world, the police, because the police, nobody cared.
Right.
Nobody thought it was a bad crime.
Exactly. Even Remus himself. I mean, Remus was a pharmacist. That was a legitimate business. Mm-hmm. He was an attorney. That was a legitimate business. But he was seeing everyone getting rich off of bootlegging.
Well, it's kind of like the scene in The Godfather where the guy wants to come in and sell heroin.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get the Godfather to back him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Godfather says, Marlon Brando says that, you know, we are involved in gambling. Prostitution, things that are frowned upon by the Catholic Church, but that men want, and really cause no harm.
Mm-hmm.
And you are asking about heroin, mm-hmm. which the men that the judges that I have in my pocket and the police and everybody else are going to frown deeply upon mm-hmm. and are going to turn on me.
Right.
And that was the thing about bootlegging is the police, number one, they really didn't care. They thought it was a silly thing.
Yeah.
You know, we could do a whole thing on how the fluke of how Prohibition and the people are brought together, you know, mm-hmm. the Klan and the Anti-Temperance League and, you know, things sure. like that. But nobody really cared about Prohibition.
Because it was a victimless crime.
Yeah. So all this money's out there, and it's like, hey, if you're a policeman walking down the street. Now, if you're a policeman walking down the street and somebody says, hey, I'm going to give you $100 a week to turn you back, and I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be molesting little kids over here.
Mm-hmm.
99.5% of policemen are going to say, oh, hell no, you ain't.
Exactly, you know? Exactly.
But you who say, I'm going to give you $100 a week, just don't pay no attention to the beer truck coming. What the hell, the policemen don't care about the beer truck coming anyway.
Yeah, especially as you get into late 1920s and the 30s yeah. where you're in a Great Depression. And
Things were tight.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these guys, they looked at it as a victimless crime. They didn't care. There was tons of money to be made. It was being passed out. Everybody involved was doing good.
And again.
So LaGuardia says, you know, let's just be done with this. You know, let's legalize it. And, hell, let's collect the tax money ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys are making all the money.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Similar audience making that being made now for marijuana legalization. And LaGuardia, as you said, he used this Frank Dodge.
Yeah, he took it to Congress.
Yeah, he made a speech on the floor of Congress about this, giving this example of how this victimless crime is corrupting public officials.
Yeah, he walked him all the way through the whole thing. Didn't do him any good,
right.
But he got himself on record. But so now the distillery's gone. Remus has got himself $100 of his multi-million dollar empire.
Yeah.
And Imogene decides to do the decent thing and divorcing. So on his way to court, you know, he was kind of the Michael Corleone. He did not like violence, but even right. Michael Corleone.
Everyone has their limits.
Yeah, everyone has their limits, and some people got it coming.
And we do not condone murder or domestic violence, but then in some cases you can see what leads a man to do the things he does.
Well, there's, as I say, you hear me say from time to time, bad things happen to people, and some people have it coming. And Imogene I saw a picture on the internet the other day, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was two German shepherds sitting side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And one had a sign hanging from his neck. And it said, "Do not let karma bite you in the ass." And a German shepherd next to him had a sign hanging from its neck saying, "I am karma."
So karma comes back
in the way of George Remus running into them on the way to the divorce.
Yeah, she's in a taxi going to the courthouse. He's in a car.
He's in a taxi.
Oh, he's in a taxi. She's in a car.
She's in a car with her daughter, and they went to Eden Park.
Yes. And Eden Park, for those you don't know, is a nice little park here in Cincinnati.
Beautiful place.
Public park. Very beautiful.
So Remus chases, has his cab driver chase her, forces her off the road. Remus jumps out, and why he's got a gun on the way to court, divorce court, maybe he was going to shoot her there anyway.
May have been.
But he jumps out, shoots her right in the stomach in front of the Springhouse Gazebo, if you know Forest Park. Mm-hmm. In front of just tons and tons of people. I mean, yeah, it was the middle of the day.
Middle of the afternoon, right.
In September, or I'm sorry, it's October, which is a beautiful place, beautiful time in Eden Park. So he gets prosecuted for this. Now, this is where it gets really interesting and really funny. Now, the prosecutor here is Charles Phelps Taft II. Now, he's the son of Chief Justice and a former president, and I believe the only president to be on the Supreme Court,
wasn't he? Yes, yes. He was the president, and he served in the Supreme Court after his term of office was over. And Taft, for all of you don't know, Taft family, very big and political.
Oh, they're very powerful here in Ohio, Cincinnati.
But especially Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, because the prosecutor's future brother was going to be Senator Robert Taft.
Yeah.
So, now,
the father of Bob Taft, right?
Right.
Who was the, who was governor here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not too long ago.
And although I will say Taft, by all accounts, is probably the worst governor that people can remember that Ohio had. I mean, he was a Republican governor, and if you mention his name to Republicans, they just kind of
cringe.
Yeah, they cringe. And say, oh, well, yeah. I was the one that didn't vote for him, but
he
was not a great governor. But anyway, now Taft has just lost his last big case against another bootlegger. So, and he was seen as a guy with a big, big political future.
Right.
So he's
if your last name
case.
Is Taft and you're in Ohio, especially in Cincinnati,
you got
Taft Law Firm future. Here in Cincinnati is one of the
most powerful here in the city.
Yeah, today even today.
So he's lost his case. So now this trial, this is not the OJ trial. But it's making national headlines.
Right, right.
Because Remus is claiming, and he defended himself on the murder show.
Yeah, and Remus being an attorney.
And he was a veteran. Remember, this guy did murder cases up in Chicago. That's what he specialized in.
Exactly.
So Remus decides to plead temporary insanity and argue this case out in court. Now, if you follow legal cases, you know anything about it. And Timmy, you got a law degree, so you know this. The insanity defense is iffy at best. I mean, not many people win it.
No, not very many people win it. It's a very high bar.
Yeah, and people that try it, typically, not people that try it, but you have people that you can see on the news are clearly insane, and they can't even win an insanity defense.
Right.
Now, Remus has made $40 million as a bootlegger. He's done all this, done all that.
He's already served 2 years in penitentiary.
Yeah. He's a smart, smart guy, but he pleads temporary insanity. And that was just crazy. Just crazy saying, that's the insanity part is him saying he had temporary insanity.
Right.
It took the jury 19 minutes to acquit him.
Yeah, he won.
He won.
So he kills his wife. He
kills his wife.
Broad daylight.
Yeah.
Middle of Eden Park.
Hundreds
of witnesses.
It wasn't a heat of the moment thing. He had his damn cab chase her and force her off the road, jumps out, gets a gun. She starts to run, shoots her in the stomach.
With the daughter there. Yeah.
So, one of the things that worked for him in this, one of the things that worked for him, it wouldn't have mattered what he said. It took him 19 minutes. He probably had five or six people that he paid off on the jury.
He was kind of a popular character, though.
He was a popular character, and when word got out, again, this, as I just said, kind of jokingly, but some people got it coming.
Yeah, and people could have.
These people on the jury are thinking, maybe they're thinking,
you got it coming. I mean, you don't steal a man's dog. Because that's why I think there was a dog in it. It only took
one. Well, and you're looking at, you're also thinking of morality of the 1930s where, you know, extramarital affairs were really frowned upon. And, you know, you had
public extramarital. Everybody was having extramarital publicly. And then you liquidate the guy's stuff and you give him $100 and you do this.
And you take the fact he was a popular guy around town. And, you know, people could see it as a, I guess, crime of passion or whatever.
Yeah, and he was, and unlike Al Capone, he was a very polished man.
Mm-hmm.
And his, you know, Al Capone in Chicago was never going to be accepted by high society.
Right.
Remus was in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
He was accepted here. And he, you know, when the story was laid out of, you know, okay, I went to prison for what I did. Then this guy, who's an investigator, takes all my stuff, sure. takes my wife, they liquidate it, and then they give me $100.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what the hell? And then they got my dog, and well, okay, I keep throwing the dog in, but anyway, so they commit him. Now the state of Ohio says, okay, Mr. Crazy.
Yeah, you're claiming you're insane.
You're claiming you're insane. Now the state of Ohio, when they had this, they had three well-known prosecutors, psychiatrists come in. To testify to Remus, this is during the trial.
Right.
They bring three well-known psychiatrists in to testify to just tear apart and shred.
The prosecutors did.
Mm-hmm. Tear apart his insanity defense. They're
right.
saying there's no way this man is insane. He's lying. He's a judge. He's a clear thinker. There ain't nothing wrong with him. He's lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets the insanity acquittal. So now an insanity acquittal don't mean that you're off the hook. So
right.
now the state of Ohio says, oh, okay, well, okay, Mr. Batshit Crazy, here's what we're going to do to you.
Because remember now, this was back in the day when they had, you know,
Insane asylum.
Yeah, before the deinstitutionalization.
Yeah.
If you were insane, they put you in an insane asylum.
So what they say to Remus is, well, hell, you are a danger to society. We're going to have to lock your ass up in the mental thing.
Right.
So what Remus does is he gets these, uses the state's own case against them and says, well, hold the hell on now. You got the three most well-known guys in the country. You just said in the trial, these are the three foremost experts in the country that just said I wasn't insane.
So he uses the state's argument that he is, in fact, sane after he was found not guilty of the murder due to temporary insanity. So he turns around and uses the state's own witnesses against him.
I mean, it's kind of like the guy saying, well, yeah, you know, the old saying, yes, I did kill my parents, but you should have mercy on me because I'm an orphan now.
Yes.
You know, I mean, but he did it even. He did him one better. I mean, he brought the guys back in to say, did you or did you not say that I'm the sanest man you've seen in a long time?
Let's read the testimony.
So the state. So he just walks away from this whole thing.
Yeah, he gets off of it. He's found not guilty of murder, reason of insanity. He gets out of being institutionalized because he uses the state's own witnesses to say that he's not insane.
Yeah.
This is a guy.
This is the if your back's up against a wall and you did it.
Yeah,
this is the attorney you need.
Yeah,
because he is just shameless.
Yeah.
I mean he's.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean he's the guy was a sharp attorney. He was a sharp businessman. Now he after his after the 8 months is all after all this is over.
Mm-hmm.
He retires. He tries to get back into bootlegging, but at this time. While all this is going on, Peter Schmidt, who was his partner, he opens up the Beverly Hills Supper Club.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Cleveland Mafia, who starts to move into Covington and Newport. They open up their own strip joints. They open up their own little gambling places. And Remus decides, you know what, he really doesn't want to. He doesn't have the firepower.
Lost his wife.
Yeah.
He's lost his fortune. He spent 2 years in prison. He went through a murder trial.
Yeah.
at this point, he just wants out of it.
Yeah.
Plus, he can see the writing on the wall that prohibition is going to be lifted.
It's going to be lifted.
Yeah. So, George,
but he does. Mm-hmm. But he did have. He did have some money that Imogene didn't get. Mm-hmm. Man ain't fool enough to give every single thing to the woman.
Yeah, you have to. Do you have a little slush fund that Renee doesn't know about?
I have a little slush fund that Renee, unfortunately, Renee knows about it. The twins know about it. Logan knows about it. And,
does the federal government know about it?
The federal government knows about it. Okay. And, NSA knows about everything I do. Because the NSA has the colonel on a watch list.
Well, I'm sure they follow your tweets. I'm sure
they do. Yeah. They do. You know what happened the other day? Somebody accidentally did it, but the colonel posted something on Facebook, and the NSA accidentally liked it.
They gotta be careful.
Yeah. Where was we, Timmy?
We were talking about
Andy Remus's career.
Yeah, yeah.
He still had a little bit of money. He didn't die a pauper.
No, he actually lived modestly the rest of his life.
Yeah, he lived modestly.
He moved to Covington, Kentucky, which is like Newport, is just across the river from Cincinnati. And he lived there for another 20 years in his life, lived modestly without any incidents. He died in his home in Covington in 1952 at the age of 77 of natural causes. He is now married nearby in Falmouth, Kentucky. So that's the story.
But there was never a record. What's interesting about him is this guy, you know, if he's unique in a way, and this is why they found him so interesting. Fitzgerald found him so interesting. Mm-hmm. And you know, anybody that follows literature, listens to literature, will tell you that he really was the inspiration for Gatsby and The Great Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
And The Great Gatsby is actually one of my favorite books. Now, if you haven't read that book, I would recommend it highly. You need to read it.
Well, you can see the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, no. Now, the movie of Robert Redford's a little closer to the book. But, but if you...
No, I'm just kidding. I never saw that movie.
But the book is an American classic.
It truly is.
And it kind of tells about that time. And you know, that's where it's got the quote, "Rich people are different than you and me."
Yeah.
But it's a really good book. And what's interesting about this guy is that if you look at all the bootleggers, all the gangsters, all the guys from across the country, you know, and it's amazing how many in America today. How many powerful people, their fortunes were made from bootlegging.
And who, you know, supported and backed Prohibition. I mean, that to them was a godsend.
Yeah, it was. It was like, you know, this is perfect. You know, everybody knows Joe Kennedy made his fortune bootlegging. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where, then he created a political dynasty.
Right.
But what was interesting about Remus that differentiated him from all the other ones was he was a very polished man. He avoided violence. Now, he did have Peter Schmidt, but he avoided violence at every turn. And he was never put in a position to really have to use violence other than to protect his trucks from hijackers. That's really, you know, the only time. But he didn't have the Al Capone, Bugs Moran.
Yeah, they didn't have
the Five Family Wars. Yeah. You didn't have bodies in the street. And that's, again, why nobody cared.
He was just looking for his little slice of the pie. And he found it here in Cincinnati and, you know, made his fortune in it.
Yeah, and by looking for his little slice of pie, he got the whole damn pie.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
and like I said, he was doing well in Chicago. I mean, he was doing well as an attorney. He was making $50,000 a year, which was a bundle back in the '20s.
Right, but that's what's most interesting. You know, to most people, what you could do all kinds of podcasts on bootleggers, and they would all pretty much follow a script. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like okay, they started with the little gang, they moved their way up, then they. There was a leader, you know, it's kind of the Lucky Luciano story. Mm-hmm. There was a couple leaders. He has them knocked off. He takes over. He's in power for a long time until the police get him. And then somebody else comes into power. But Remus was an entity all of his own. Mm-hmm. And there's no script for really what he did. He was not out shooting people. He didn't have competition to kill.
And he was in a unique position because he had his background as a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
So he could easily get the license and the waivers that he needed for the bootleg. He had the background as a defense attorney.
Yeah.
So he knew the law.
Yeah.
So he was in an ideal position to take advantage of bootlegging, and he did. It made him one of Cincinnati's and one of the country's more interesting characters.
And it was interesting because because he knew all these things, he did not have to share things with other people. He did not have to, you get Al Capone. He's got to talk to a lawyer. He's got to talk to this guy. He's got to talk to that guy.
Right.
Remus knew all this stuff. He didn't have to talk to people
about it.
Interesting why he decided to confide in Dodge in prison, mm-hmm. Which was really his downfall.
Yeah. And like you said, with Capone and organized, they would bring in the booze from, imported from Canada.
Yeah, they were getting it from anywhere.
But he just said, "Hey, I'm making myself, and mm-hmm. I'll start my own distillery.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, I don't have to worry about all this bootleg running. I'll just make it myself." So,
yeah.
George Remus, an interesting guy. Frank Dodge, by the way, he ended up going back to Michigan, where he was from, and he worked for the Michigan. Interesting enough, the Michigan Commission of Alcohol Control after Prohibition was over. Where he died in 1968.
Now, him and Imogen, they did not stay together.
Oh, no, she died.
That's right. Never mind. What I meant to say was he did not get remarried after Imogen.
No, he did. He actually he got remarried. Never did have any kids. He got remarried after. He never married Imogen. He did get married in Michigan, and he died. They never had any, him and his wife never had any kids. And like I said, he died in 1968. So he lived a pretty long time because this occurred in the 20s. So that's it. That's all for George Remus, King of the Bootleggers. So, Colonel, how's the campaign going?
The campaign going pretty good. Now, I'm getting a little disturbed because all you keep hearing, again, is Bernie Sanders. Now, Hillary's supposed to start. Hillary started her campaign.
I think she announced today.
She announced it.
We released this, but
and again, the colonel running for president, so you're going to have to put up with a little bit of politics. Now, what I'm really happy is we ain't got Elizabeth Warren out there, and I don't know if you saw the news, Timmy, but they had Jamie Dimon from, he was going to explain banking to Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I thought, and the colonel, one of the things I'm going to do when I'm put in office, the statute of limitations for that kind of fraud is going to go back 30 years.
For
Wall Street. Because Wall Street. I'm sitting here listening to this guy who says, well, we really need, Senator Warren does not really understand banking. Well, the problem is Senator Warren does understand banking. And she knows you son of a bitches committed the biggest fraud in the country. And you're walking around giving speeches when your ass should be in jail somewhere.
Yeah.
So the colonel.
You're going after Wall Street.
Oh, I will go after them like a pit bull.
Yeah.
Because the way, it's.
They're not going to like you, Colonel. You're going to make some enemies there on Wall Street.
Oh, the colonel got enemies. The colonel got enemies.
Yeah, he does.
You know, but Timmy, now think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You think I'm worried about Wall Street? I walk down Finley Street every day.
Oh, yeah. Wall Street's not there.
Wall Street ain't nothing compared to Finley Street. I walk down Finley Street, and then I come up Elm Street. Now, if they ain't going to get me on Finley Street or Elm Street, Wall Street ain't going to get me.
For those of you who are not familiar with Cincinnati, Finley Street is in a rough, kind of rough area of town. So,
we doing pretty good. I did see, and you know what? Scott Walker?
Mm-hmm.
Some bitch came to ride a motorcycle. They took pictures of him on sitting on one.
Was he riding it? Did he ride it?
No, he was interviewed sitting on one. Ain't nobody.
But it was hard to interview him as he was riding.
Ain't nobody got a picture of Scott Walker riding one. Now the colonel can ride a motorcycle. Yeah. The colonel can ride a unicycle.
That would be good.
That's probably what I'm going
to
do.
They would have to have one of those boom microphones to interview.
Yeah, to interview me, yeah. but. But I, you know, I ain't got to get on no damn motorcycle to prove that I got testosterone or that I'm man enough for something. Hell,
Hillary. Well, I heard that they both parties wanted to do away with the Iowa straw poll because they knew that you were going to win it and they didn't want to be embarrassed.
And you know what I told them? I told them, I don't even want to be in your damn straw poll. I said, I don't give a rat's ass. You get 35 people or something to vote, say who. I don't give a rat's ass what you're going to do out here in the straw poll. The colonel got bigger issues to deal with.
You don't even like straw.
I don't even like straw. What am I? I look like a damn donkey? It's a straw poll. What the hell's that even
mean?
So
is Elizabeth Warren going to run?
No, Mrs. Warren, she's a lovely senator. She's a lovely woman. She's a great senator. But she's not going to run because we've had some lengthy conversations.
And she thinks you're representing her.
She thinks I represent...
the anti-Wall Street.
And, you know, people, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled out there. Elizabeth Warren is not a communist. Elizabeth Warren, again, is a populist who... is smarter. She's one of the few people, you know, and that's what's interesting about the Bernie Sanders, the Elizabeth Warrens. They come from these states where now Elizabeth Warren did spend a good amount of money to win, but they come from these states where you don't need tons and tons and tons of money. And you know, I take my shots at Bernie Sanders because the man's crazy. I mean, you listen to him, the man is crazy.
I kind of like Bernie myself.
Oh, I love Bernie, but he's crazy as hell. But you know why he can be crazy, Timmy?
He's from Vermont.
He's from Vermont, and everybody in Vermont crazy. And you know what? They like crazy people up there.
They
like
socialist up there.
You know why? Because Bernie Sanders
They're really Canada. Let's face it. They're really Canada.
Oh, they're right next to Canada.
Right. They're really part
and,
of
But Bernie Sanders gets out there, and he'll say, you know what? He'll say the craziest thing, and people in Vermont will be like, oh, that shit's burning. And people, you know, Vermont ain't one that is going to, you know. And I go back to Huey Long. There's that famous quote that Huey Long said, you know, Standard Oil come down here to run Louisiana, I'll kick the ass.
And we need to do a podcast on Huey.
Yeah, and he literally said that. They come down here, try to run Louisiana, I will whip their ass. And he did. Yep. And Bernie Sanders says, you know what? Wall Street come to Vermont, try to run Vermont, I will whip their ass. And Vermont people just sit back in their rocking chairs because Vermont people got serious shit to worry about. They got bears up there.
They do have bears. But, you know, if you notice, most of the Northeast, most of the states that border Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Are blue states.
Yeah.
Because they live right across the border where you have socialized medicine, where you have a more progressive policy.
Well, and you know, there's people from Vermont, yeah, and this is what kind of you get, there's kind of an unfairness, you know, labeled at these people. Because people from Vermont, people from Maine, people to a certain degree from Massachusetts, they're fierce. They're very liberal people, but they're very, very fiercely independent people.
Mm-hmm.
And
New Hampshire,
they feel like, you know what, you go about your business, I'm gonna go about mine. And if you say, you know, Bob and Steve over there want to get married, what the hell matter to me? I don't give a rat's ass.
Exactly.
You know? Because, again, we got bears up here. We got bears. We got shit to worry about. And
It's cold.
We got bears. I got to make sure my snowmobile working. Yeah. I mean, I got serious things. And it's
you
got to
go out and get the sap from the trees. I mean, we got stuff to do.
And this is one of the reasons I kind of love Bernie. Is, you know, when they introduced some gun legislation one time, Bernie voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bernie's supposed to be a socialist, a communist, you know, whatever. So, a huge, terrible liberal. So he's going to vote against. He's going to want to take away your guns, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie said, "Well, you know, I would like to see some gun control, but the people in my state don't because we got bears."
Damn bears.
And
now they've got escape convicts.
Yeah. We got bears. So you know what? While what my personal opinion is one thing, but I represent the people in my state.
Right. And do what they want.
And let's do what they want. And that really, when you went at the end of the day, at the end of the day, whether you're Republican, whether you're Democrat, whether you're a libertarian, whatever you are, you look at the person and say, is that person representing my views?
Right.
And that's really what the colonel's going to do. I'm going to get out there and I'm going to say,
you're a man of the people.
What is it? And that's what we need, Timmy. Mm-hmm. A man of the people. And you know,
I really think Elizabeth Warren, though, I think she's missing her chance. And I think she's doing the old Mario Cuomo dance where, you know, remember Mario Cuomo yeah. was always the considered always the front runner.
Right, the and front
always,
run, yeah.
But he would never throw his hat into the ring.
Yeah.
And I think she's getting a – she's running a risk by, you know, I don't know if she's waiting or she's just really not interested, but – I think her window is going to close if she's not too careful.
Now, I don't believe Elizabeth Warren wants to be president.
Yeah, that might be it.
I believe what she wants. I believe the woman, you know, and me and Elizabeth have had lunch a few times.
Mm-hmm.
The woman
did you pick up the tab?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and I'll tell you why, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why. Because
does she eat a lot? Does she eat a lot?
No, she's like a bird.
Oh, you know?
So she eats a salad. She give me water with lemon in it.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
So she's very easy to, you know, you pick up the. Now you go out with Perry.
Mm-hmm. He eats like a horse.
Oh, and my other nemesis,
like Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah,
Ted Cruz. You don't ever pick up the check with that fat son of a bitch. I mean, he got an order. It's like you think everything done. Uh-huh. The lady come around, Ted Cruz like, could I see the dessert cart? I was like, no, don't bring the dessert. No, give him a menu because some bitch will eat the whole cart. He'll eat everything on the cart.
And you're picking up the tab.
Yeah, and I'm picking up the tab for this
yeah.
because I'm, you know, as you know.
Because you like Canadians.
I like Canadians, and I'm funding my campaign myself.
Right, right.
I'm not beholden to any corporations.
You're not, so you're not taking any donations from the Koch brothers?
The Koch brothers? No, actually, the Koch brothers came to me.
Mm-hmm.
I told you that story. They had a man
mm-hmm.
wanted to talk to me. Had a suitcase, had a bunch of cash in it, and I told him. I said, you know, the colonel got a CCW,
mm-hmm.
Which is my concealed carry.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. You put my life in danger here.
Mm-hmm.
So don't make me pull it.
So you don't want any, you're taking nothing from Rupert Murdoch or nobody.
No, I won't. You know what I do to Rupert Murdoch? Never mind. I better not say that on there. But anyway, here's what I believe about Elizabeth Warren.
Too. Yes,
they haven't had a few conversations. The woman's obsessed. She's mm-hmm. obsessed, and what she's obsessed with is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is Wall Street's screwing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street is a drain on the middle class and the upper middle class's wealth. That's what they are built to do, is drain the wealth from the country into hedge fund managers' pockets. And she's obsessed with that. And she mm-hmm. wants to change it. She's obsessed with the with the school loans. She's
mm-hmm.
obsessed. So she really is a...
She's having an impact.
She's having an impact in what Elizabeth...
I heard a rumor that you kind of had an impact on the trade agreement being defeated.
Well, I went to... And you know, I don't like... You know I don't like Mitch McConnell.
Right.
And the reason I don't like Mitch McConnell is... Mitch McConnell looks like the guy... And the colonel being a little bit shallow here, I'm sorry, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch McConnell looked like the guy who kind of chuckled. He looked like the guy that wanted to shut the orphanage down all the time.
Kind of looks like the Frisch's big boy.
If he put on about 50 pounds.
Right.
Yeah, Ted Cruz need to lose 50 pounds to be the Frisch's big boy. But Mitch McConnell looked like the guy who grinned and chuckled. If you've seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell, the guy who the banker is, who found the money,
wants to put Mr. Potter.
Yeah, Mr. Potter. He's Mr. Potter. So, I had an impact on that because I got Boehner.
Mm-hmm.
I got the Democrats together. I got President Obama. I don't know what the hell he thinking.
What about your good friend Rand Paul?
You know, and I'm going to go back to this again.
I think you don't like his hair.
What? And that's what I told him. I was like, "Come on, man."
But he had an impact on the Patriot Act.
Rand Paul doing some good things up there, but the problem with Rand Paul is he a hypocrite and he lazy.
Isn't that about every politician though?
Not the colonel.
Well, except for of course, present company.
I got Scott running with me.
And Scott is a fine, upstanding young man.
Yeah, but he's a Polack to me.
Well, he can't help the fact that he's from Polish descent, but he's very popular, and he'll bring in a lot of that votes from Illinois. You'll need Illinois.
What? No, I got the twins up there to take care of.
Well, Illinois. You do have your twins.
Taylor done gone through half the girls, the voting age women.
But that's Illinois. Chicago. And
Chicago.
Chicago can be in your back pocket anyway.
Well, it was. I'm trying to get Scott to change his name to something more Native American-ish.
Yeah, so
But he's fighting me on it.
What example would that be? Like Scott Big Eagle or something?
Yeah, the Scott Little Hawk.
Yeah.
You know, Little Hawk.
I see. So it would be Big Hawk and Little Hawk.
That'd be Big Hawk and Little Hawk.
Gotcha.
You know, Scott is his own man, you know, and that's why I picked him. He's his own man.
He's anxious for you to join us for a podcast, so.
Well, I can't wait to do it. But it's hard to get us together because we're out fighting battles all the time.
I know you guys, you don't want the two of you together because what if something would happen? There would be a...
Well, if they had the two of us in one place, you know what would happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, you got the CIA, ISIS,
NSA,
the Masons, the Illuminati,
all those people after us. Yeah. You can't be in. It's sort of like the president when he gives his State of the Union speech. You guys, you and the vice president, you can't be in the same place at the same time.
No, we're not.
You're not going to be taking any parades and open air cars and going down Dallas together.
Well, now, I think Scott be okay with that because he, again, Scott, and you know I love the people of Polish descent.
Yeah, I know you do.
But they do have hard heads.
Well, they're stubborn, but they're in a good way.
Stubborn in a good way, but I believe, you know, you take a shot at Scott, they're liable to just bounce off his head and hit me. You know, that's what
I don't think that's true at all.
He's a good man.
He is a good man.
But he's going to be,
He does a good job on his podcast. He puts a lot of work in, and we really appreciate that. So, Colonel, you want to give a shout out to my mom because she'll be expecting
You know, that? I do not do a show without doing a shout out to Scott, to Mrs. Scott, the lovely Dottie. She's a faithful listener, and we
one of our few listeners.
We got plenty of listeners here. We get enough. It surprises me that people actually, you know, we look at our downloads, and I sometimes think, what the hell? I mean, what?
Think about something better to do.
Something better to do. But you know what?
We appreciate everyone listening.
Even Renee, my wife, will listen to these and say. And this is what we really hope for. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, and we're going long on this one, I guess, but at the end of the day, what we really hope for is that it was an hour that you were half entertained and learned something. Learned something you didn't know because nobody hits something that says the history, dweebs, without wanting to learn something. And
we try to cover stories that you don't see everywhere else.
Yeah. So, you know, what you do is if you like what we're doing, you go to Facebook, look us up, leave us a review.
A comment. iTunes.
Go to iTunes, more importantly, and look at us. Leave a review there. You can download every podcast we've ever done. And I'll tell you some of the finest work we've done, I believe, was the Jonas Salk story. You might want to listen to that. But anyway... Go to iTunes. You can go to historydweeb.com.
Or you can leave us an email through Facebook. Or you can send one directly to me, timtscott@yahoo.com. We will respond to every mail. We'll give you a shout-out on the air. We don't do this for money. We do it for fun. But we'd like to have some feedback from folks. So
send us an email. And for the love of God, somebody, you know, the Colonel don't, you know, to me, I got no ego.
You are the most modest man that I know.
For the love of God,
you're Christ-like, actually.
But I don't like the sandals.
Oh,
I don't
like the sandals. Yeah.
But anyway, somebody, for the love of God, say something nice about Brittany, or even the brownhead devil. Throw her a bone, even though she's a wolf. You know,
even though she's home smoking weed and playing video games.
Yeah. Because when people comment, they pretty much comment on, hey, you know, Timmy, you very smart, and the Colonel, he handsome and funny. And they never mention the girls.
Yeah.
They never mention the girls. And that's, you know, primarily because they're girls. And
primarily because they don't really add a whole lot to the show.
Not a lot.
But, you know, it's like your retarded cousin. You want to say something.
It is. Well, I don't know that I would use the word retarded.
Developing the delayed cousin. Yeah. Please say something nice.
Say something nice. But it's like you slow learning little brother.
Yeah.
You know, he
pat him on the head.
He don't learn how to ride the bike till he's 14 years old.
Right. And then it's into a wall, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so say something nice about the girls. Yeah. Brittany, she got.
Brittany, she's looking for a husband, Brittany.
Brittany is looking. And you know what? That's going to be our next show. One of these days, we're going to have a contest. Find Brittany a husband.
Yeah. Now, Brittany is a very attractive young lady.
Brittany, a beautiful young lady.
Beautiful young lady.
She ain't altogether upstairs now.
Well, but you know how many beautiful young women are.
Well, the Colonel got I give you the triangle theory, right, Timmy?
No. Why don't you explain it to me again?
I'm going to explain the triangle theory to you men out there who might be dealing with women. Now, you take yourself a piece of paper, and you draw yourself a triangle. And in one corner, one spot on that triangle, you put emotionally stable. And on another part of that triangle, you put hot. And on the other third, the remaining one, you put smart. Now, when you're looking for a woman, you take those three attributes and you pick two of them. Because you ain't ever going to find a woman that got all three.
It's like finding a unicorn.
It's like finding a purple unicorn to me.
A striped purple unicorn.
And I had to explain this to my boys.
Uh-huh.
You got emotionally stable, hot, and smart. Pick two of them. Because you ain't going to pick three.
You know what? I can do without emotionally stable. I can.
Well, most of the time, I could do away with emotionally stable.
They're fun for a while.
Now, the colonel was lucky enough to find one who scored a 2.5.
Uh-huh.
I ain't going to give you the half part, but it is on the emotionally stable section.
But she's very smart and very beautiful.
She's very smart, very pretty, emotionally volatile. I got to tell you this, we went to see the Florence Freedom last night.
Minor league baseball team.
And the mascot walked around with a bouquet of flowers,
mm-hmm.
and was looking for the loveliest woman in the stadium,
mm-hmm.
and gave them to my wife.
Well, it was well-deserved, because I'm sure she was the loveliest lady there.
And Darth Vader gave my wife a big hug. It was
Star Darth Wars Vader was there.
Yeah, Darth Vader was there.
I never know he was a big baseball fan.
Well, apparently, Darth Vader, he can hit a fastball.
Oh, really?
He can hit a fastball, yeah. Yeah, so, but he does that cheating thing, you know, when he pitching, mm-hmm. he does that, like, squeezes his hand, and then the batter all frozen up, and he just blows one by.
Okay, we're digressing. So
yeah, we are. We might have to split this into two sections.
All right, thanks, Sheriff. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll see you next time on History Degrees.
Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.